Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dally Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week, complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. In summary,
the What Culture Wrestling Podcast, the recognized symbol of excellence in wrestling podcast entertainment.
Thank you very much to Jacob Mezzanetti, who sent me that last week. Unfortunately, I received it immediately after we recorded Dynamite Review, and I thought, this is the perfect place for it. He wrote, "Hi Adam, hope you like this JAS-style sting I made for the podcast. Have a lovely day." Thank you so much for that,
Thank
Jacob.
You. Cheers, Jacob.
But as I said, and it did get a huge pap in the office as well when I played it first, but as I said, joined by the Dadley Boys to review the Go Home Dynamite ahead of Forbidden Door, with some major surprises and some disappointments on it, but maybe potentially leading to more surprises on Sunday as well, Sidge.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what to make of all of this, to be perfectly honest. I'm not convinced. Like, look, ultimately, subjectively, did I feel any more hugely hyped for Forbidden Door on Sunday, which is what the function, the core function of a go-home show is meant to do? Not really. Things were clarified. Additional matches were announced or half announced, one of which is going to be incredibly fun, but I don't know if I get it. I don't know if I should care about getting it. Certain things were just wildly undersold in a way that I just thought, what on earth are you doing? Like, spoiler alert, skip ahead. Shingo Takagi is going to team with Sting. They're called Dudes with Attitudes. And it's
Stingo.
Stingo. And they're called, formally, canonically, they are called Dudes with Attitudes. It's incredibly cool. Watching, like, what Nick Jackson and Darby haven't really mixed it up. Let alone Nick Jackson and Sting. And Shingo and Hiromu, like, he could do incredible things with all four of those men.
And El Fantasma, who's just, I've seen him in WCPW and he's jaw-dropping then, and he's been in Japan since then,
yeah,
God knows.
El Fantasma's class, like, yeah. He really is.
Get all the boys in face paint, get the Bucks back in the Bullet Club gear, make this look great for the night, you know.
But at the same time, you've just announced, or Darby's just announced, that you've got Shingo, right? Like, Hiromu Takahashi has just won his third Best of the Super Juniors tournament. Shingo Takagi is a former IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. He's one of the very best wrestlers on the world. Have the announcers go, Jesus Christ, oh my, yeah, look who we've got on this show. And it was just weirdly undersold, and I don't know, the main event angle was rubbish, but there was some awesome stuff on this show as well. It's just, again, typically uneven.
Yes.
Things I love, I've got a love-hate relationship with AEW right now. And a love-hate, fierce in both directions.
Well, and completely understandable too, because you can love one segment and then hate the very next one. That is just how these shows go. I've put it in summary in my ups and downs, which come soon to whatculture.com/WWE, because I've just finished writing it, and yet I still feel like I've forgotten half of it, like, until after we've finished recording, that this show had one awesome surprise, one fantastic promo, and yet failed to build two shows, effectively. That's AEW in a nutshell. It remains like horrifically unfocused to the detriment of loads of wrestlers and loads of programs and loads of fan enjoyment. The thing I'm going to praise the most on this in this review, as and when we get to it, is to me the kind of also the biggest indictment about AEW's product at large at the moment. It's the thing is like. Just jump ahead quickly. It's Christian Cage's promo. We're all going to praise it, I'm sure. It's been getting sort of universal praise online. But I think even upon reading some of the praise, I still think a lot of people are misunderstanding why they loved it. I'm not trying to like impose my feelings on their feelings, but I just think why this promo was getting praised was for its delivery, whereas I feel like it was what it represented. That we're just not getting enough of out of AEW at the moment, and that feeling is not clear to people. And it's just, I don't know, it's really hard because we review this every week, and you do review it with feelings, and you review it with the way that the show's supposed to make you feel about, in this case, Forbidden Door, and about Blood and Guts, and about just the angles and the wrestlers in general. Stuff can be good. It's still a gold standard for pro wrestling. AEW it is, but just in patches rather than across the show, and that's a very strange thing to try and analyse.
Is one of the ups in your article Matt Reigns making a fool of himself on social media?
No, but I wish it was. What's he done?
To segue nicely into the start of this review, he tweeted, "Zero chance Danielson is opening the show to tell this red-hot crowd he can't wrestle Sunday." So let's find out what Danielson had to say. He came out, I'm joking, Matt Reigns, of course, but he came down.
There's I'm not. Stupid idiot.
Tony Schiavone in the ring, and Danielson says, "I'm going to take this mic and not give it back so you can piss off, basically, Tony." He said, "It's a great week to be an AEW fan and by extension a professional wrestling fan. We're going to see some excellent professional wrestling on Sunday and a bloody spectacle next week." He would have loved to have been a part of it. He told us about Chris Jericho paying Zack Sabre Jr. to challenge him.
Why did Jericho have to do that? Yeah. Why couldn't Zack Sabre Jr. just say, look, there's been a massive philosophical debate for years and years and years about who the actual best technical wrestler in the planet is. Zack Sabre Jr. could have come out and said, well, you squandered some of your best years doing, sports entertainment. But now you're back in AEW and you suddenly think you're better than me despite the fact that I've done more with this legacy. Why did Chris Jericho have to pay him?
Yeah.
Why? Why for a match that didn't happen do they have to attach this unwieldy North American episodic TV device onto something that isn't even happening?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, is it not enough for the best technical wrestler from one promotion, which prizes professional wrestling as an actual art, to challenge the best professional wrestler technically in another promotion that prizes professional pure wrestling as an art and just say who's the best? Why does Chris Jericho have to do a Mid-South ransom over the head of Bryan Danielson? I know they've got to promote Blood and Guts. I remember a few weeks ago, they still hate each other. Jesus Christ.
I refer to this.
Keep it simple, stupid.
If you want a reason for it, we talked about this yesterday.
I've just given you one.
But as in, like, you can come out and say, I've won this award named after you in the Wrestling Observer newsletter more than you have, and you've just broken my streak that I had.
And I can't sanction that.
They should have renamed it after me, and yet, it's somehow now this. He would see it as an injustice that Brian has come back and reclaimed this.
I couldn't believe my fucking ears when they said that. Why does Chris Jericho have to pay Zack Sabre Jr. this?
In this specific promo as well, based on what it was exactly Brian was. Sorry, we've trampled over your recap here, Wilbon, but that's based fine. On what Brian was sent out to do here, I think this was wrestling's first ever going home promo. Setting up Sunday's pay-per-view with a match that wasn't going to happen, as the rest said, well, I'm injured, so I'm away for a bit. Like, Sidgwick rightfully pointed this out on the podcast, and then you tweeted it as well, I think, about how this is a disaster of an idea, and that's what they did. That is what they did. Like, hi, guys, bet you're all looking forward to the match. Can't have it, see you later. Like, what's the problem, Brian? Because we've, all of us have got these inbuilt concerns about that head of yours, and for that matter, like the rest of your body, you can speed read and you can still run. Cool. Do you want to be a bit clearer on what the problems are? No? Great. Right, that's like allowed me to worry a little bit more as well and like express a bit of concern for when it is exactly you're going to be back. Got a wrestler for the weekend. Like, this entire segment should have been a tweet.
Yeah, it should have been a tweet because not only I've spent like a little bit of time idly thinking, I really hope. Like, it's the hope that kills you. I really hope that I knew it wasn't a work instantly, right? Because why would you, for 48 hours... work a situation where people are concerned about Bryan Danielson's well-being. You're meant to work people into excitement or drama or mystery, not anxiety, for 48 hours whether your favourite match on the card is going to happen. My God, this is completely and utterly useless.
He said, at Forbidden Door, Jack Sabre Jr., who's that? Zack Sabre Jr. wanted to prove he was the best technical in the world, whilst Danielson wanted to crush his trachea, but it's not going to happen. He's got some good news, he's got some bad news.
What a line. Save that for the actual go-home promo.
Like, you are building a match that cannot happen as you prepare to leave television for a while. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, good news, bad news, he said. Bad news is because of Jericho's crew in the Anarchy Arena. He is not clear to compete at Forbidden Door or Blood and Guts next week. But he's going to be back, as Hamflet mentioned. He's fine. He can read 500 words a minute. He can run 2 miles and not break a sweat. His mind is working at full speed. So there's some really...
breaking a sweat. You're going to steal, we might as well steal from the best, I suppose.
But in terms of the future, for Forbidden Door, he has found the one person to take his place, for Forbidden Door and Blood and Guts, I should say, who can be technical and violent. He's going to astound you. And he pauses and there's the hoo-hoo. And he says, come on, I came out of the bad guy tunnel, I'm not going to tell you. Tune in on Sunday, you'll see the best technical match of your lives. And he goes to leave and out comes Zack Sabre Jr. to yell at him from the ramp with no microphone.
This is so stupid as well. Like, this was the point where I was like, you should have just left the Forbidden Door shut. Like, the more it opens up, the less I want to see people walking through it. Imagine being sent out there to do nothing. Zack Sabre Jr. can do two things really well, right? Cut these like quite witty, funny, cocksure promos and just put on a wrestling masterclass. Imagine you have 60 seconds of him on television and he gets to do literally neither of them. Like, an unbelievable misfire of an opening segment this was, not least because it had Dynamite stray from its typical format of the hot opener and thus, in my opinion, undermined what was like quite a good opener that never got a chance to really be great, because they probably assumed that Bryan would be a ratings winner to open the show with, you know. What a dreadful presentation of Zack Sabre Jr. You'd have been better off having like announced that there's going to be a mystery opponent for Zack on Sunday, having last week played the video of the promo we cut to try and talk this match into existence in the first place. You've got neither of the two things that Zack Sabre Jr. can do really well. And I'm not suggesting that this show needs this episode. What this episode didn't need to do, because I don't want to be misconstrued here, is do the sort of like crazy exposition of who these New Japan wrestlers are if you're not a New Japan fan. Like, this product treats you with more intelligence than that on a weekly basis, so it can allow you to infer some things. But I don't think you could infer that from this. If you've never seen what Zack Sabre Jr. can do, and you've just been told this off another guy, and if that's not a good job of telling you who this guy is, him coming out and putting his arms out wide, like friggin' Vince McMahon did on SmackDown last week, is hardly the sales pitch for who ZSJ is. The pay-per-view will do that. I'm fully aware of that. But this was just like bollocks on top of bullshit.
What a bummer. Exposition can double as promotion. If, just in case you don't know, we're not trying to insult you here, here's a minute-long reel of what Sabre Jr. can do using the footage we are allowed to use because we are in partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling. Here's 40 seconds of this master tying people up in knots and reversing literally anything. We will discuss the potential opponents for Zack Sabre Jr. at Forbidden Door in another podcast. So check your feeds later this week.
Yes.
Not to give away any clues, but people should have probably let us in to their feeds. Spoiler alerts.
And if you want to pitch anyone you'd like to hear us potentially mention, you can tweet them at us at WhatCultureWWE, at MCDrick, at Michael Hamflet, at Adam Wilborn. Yeah, we'll be talking all about that in a brief video podcast tomorrow. And we're going to be previewing all of Forbidden Door in the extended version a little bit later on today. So, What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, make sure you subscribe.
A bit of repetition, but you know, it's fine.
Just to clarify. Moxley's backstage talking about the Jericho Appreciation Society. They're going to be locked in with dogs next week. Blood and Guts. Kennel from Hell. Meanwhile, he's got to take on and, even before that, team with Hiroshi Tanahashi, the greatest wrestler who ever lived. He says, tonight it's just business. Sunday is personal. When that bell rings, he's got no respect for anyone.
Right. There was a theme running throughout the show, and I noticed this, and it's AEW's lack of focus writ large. And I'm going to cobble them together. I don't have much else to say on the other two. But there was this. There was the Jade Cargill search for a new baddie promo, and there was Sanjay Dutt about Samoa Joe.
I'm talking about that.
This was great because it's Moxley. This was rubbish for every other reason, right? John Moxley's delivery is absolutely fantastic, and he makes everything feel real. And like, no matter what fight it is, you will walk with him into that fight because that's John Moxley's incredible ability, right? Everything else was him trying to not make this fake sport feel fake. Like, the amount of things he had to do was like one of those WWE game show host Monday Night Raw openings where you've got six things that you need to get to. When they do it, it's because they want to remind the audience of absolutely every single tiny little thing that we've just seen a highlight package of.
Mm-hmm.
In AEW, ideally, you want maybe two is fair, right? Who you're wrestling tonight and a reminder of the big picture storyline, because this company is the one that previously has told like long range and big picture stories. Here, it just felt like, right, I've got this to do. It's a bit weird that this is my life at the moment, isn't it? But I'm going to try and make all of this not feel fake and contrived. He managed it, and yet I still don't think you can get away from that. Similarly, because I'll just cover it now, Sonjay Dutt later on in the show doing the exact same thing, where he's like, Samoa Joe, I think we should just give the title to Jay Lethal. And I'm thinking, well, why don't you just make a fucking interim title? Have another fucking tournament, because that's what happens every fucking week on this show. And Jade Cargill being like, having the search for the baddies, and then conveniently, immediately cuts to the babyfaces there fighting. And being like, one of yours is out of action. Looks like we've got an advantage in the numbers game. It's just like, God, there is so much absolute nonsense and fluff that they're requiring good talkers to try and talk around on this show.
I know, I'm just going to get to the Sonjay Dutt thing just to get it out of the way. Can you remember when there was a bit of anxiety? Oh, God, before the final of the Owen, I think Meltzer had reported in the Observer like his sort of presumed lineup for Double or Nothing, and Lethal Joe was on there, and a lot of people were like, really? Double or Nothing, and everyone was a little scared that was going to make it even longer and worse, let's face it. And then he got into the Owen final. That match still hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So I can't be pleased because I just get it over with. Not a Double or Nothing, but on Rampage, so I don't really care. This Boxy thing, I got nothing further to add. I have a lot of latitude that I like to extend towards John, and I used all of it during this promo.
Then we got the opener, opening match, that is Will Ospreay and Aussie Open, Mark Davies and Cole Bloody Fletcher versus Roppongi Vice, Trent Barretta and Rocky Romero, and Orange Cassidy. Just a tease of one of the most, I think it's fair to say, hotly anticipated matches from Sunday. All I've seen from people is like, what's your favorite match? Because weirdly, despite everything, despite Moxley, Tanahashi, people are like, I really want to see Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy, and this was a bit of a tease for it.
So I do too. I'm not so sure that is there, the common take, you know.
There isn't one.
No, I'm not sure there is like a hive mind take on this match. Will Ospreay, like, I don't want to spend a lot of time.
I think people are up for it. I want to clarify. Don't think there's one particular match that everyone's most excited for. What does that tell you? Well, AEW sexuals.
So I never want to spend too long personally putting over Billy No Brains. That was something else, actually, Sid Junior said. It was really funny one time. He's got a great patter. He used to have it on Twitter, but he forgot his password.
Yeah, he forgot his password.
So it's one of them things with Ospreay where the mere mention of him being involved in this card throws up a ton of potential dream matches. And you could apply that to most of this card, unfortunately. But I think a lot of people have kind of received Orange Cassidy as, oh, this is AEW pissing about. This is an AEW piss about match rather than, who's a super technical worker? And Nick Jackson, off the top of my head, like, oh, Nick Jackson versus Will Ospreay. Imagine that. Look at that. Like, that's what you can do with Will Ospreay. And there's tons of them guys on the roster. And instead, they've gone with Orange Cassidy, which too many people receive as a gimmick rather than what you can unleash. And if you've packed Orange Cassidy as a template, right? It's the perfect template of how well this is going to work on the night. So I'm not sure that the hype is maybe there as universally as perhaps we would think. And I think it got in the way of this match as well. I think it gave this match a distinctly mid-card flavour as a result, rather than feeling like one of New Japan's very, very top guys versus somebody that used to be considered an AEW homegrown star.
Do the recap before I disagree vehemently.
Okay. Cole Fletcher, Rocky Romero starts off, then comes Mark Davis and Trent Barretta. And then when Orange Cassidy comes in, he does his hands-in-pocket stuff that pisses off Mark Davis. They get rid of the whole of United Empire, go for dives, but Empire take control out on the outside. A load of apron attacks simultaneously. Trent fights off both of Aussie Open after a break. Orange Cassidy gets the tag and hits those weak kicks of his, I think, to both Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, if I remember.
That was
right,
a lovely twist before I forget to say it. Like, do not on both big lads was like, get in.
Yeah.
Orange, you know what you're doing, lad.
Double Hurricane Rana followed. Aussie Open get dispatched with an Escalera and a Tornado DDT. And then they all take him out with dives over the top rope to the outside. Orange does his lazy elbow drop to get a two count on Ospreay. Ospreay dodges the orange punch, reverses a DDT into that backflip enziguri of his. Orange flips it around into a stunner. In comes Mark Davis and Rocky Romero. He hits Rocky with a huge chop, and then they do that combo spine buster for a near fall as well. Then comes the parade of huge moves from all of them. Roppongi Vice double knees finishes all that. Trent goes for strong zero. Ospreay cuts it off. Davis hits that lifting pile driver of his. That gets it near fall, but Orange dives in to break up the pin. Orange dodges the Suzuki special from Will Ospreay. Ospreay takes a dive from Rocky. Trent fights off both of Aussie Open once again. Hits Orange for the tag. Orange comes in. Orange punch on Mark Davis. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, the rest of United Empire. The tag champs, Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan come out. It looks like, you know, the five of them are going to use the numbers advantage to kill the rest of them. But who should come to the rescue of Orange and his boys? But FTR, there's no brawl. There's just a mean standoff ahead of just everyone fighting each other on Sunday.
I thought this match was class. Orange Cassidy is a perfect opponent for Will Ospreay in a way that they haven't explored in the story. I touched on it yesterday. I'm going to try and say something for the preview. Their physical chemistry here was absolutely great. I've seen Cassidy do like backpack stunners to wrestlers before, and he can kind of, he doesn't telegraph it, but you can see a couple of seconds away that he's going to do it. It completely took me by surprise when he did it. He was like, oh my God. And I was like, go on, Orange, get him. Get that thick, nasty idiot that Will Ospreay is. Get him, get him, get him. So they've got this perfect face heel divide. They work perfectly together. The best thing about this is we've discussed it before as being a spiritual sequel to Orange Cassidy versus Pac, where I'm not saying that Will Ospreay is necessarily a better wrestler than Pac, but by express like design, he is more spectacular. Like Pac reigns it in as part of his character a little bit. But we've seen the novelty of Orange Cassidy being able to level up to these sort of state-of-the-art incredible wrestlers. Will Ospreay is kind of the state-of-the-art professional wrestler at this point, so you're going to get more out of Cassidy than we got against Pac, like even more. Mm-hmm. It's going to be absolutely incredible, and I think they measured the brief glimpse of it absolutely perfectly here. And one of Aussie Open did a pile driver here, which is one of the most scary things I've ever seen. And then when I realized no one broke their neck and no one and everyone was in full control of the spot, their four became one of the most impressive pile drivers I've ever seen. It was a nice little trios match in and around those spots that I highlighted, where it was all just quite hot and well-paced, and I got a lot out of this.
I thought it was pretty good, but I was just down, really, really down on the booking. Will Ospreay is going to win on Sunday. I mean, if only so he can retain his prestigious IWGP United States title.
That he never wore.
Was that belt? Was that belt? But like, he's going to win on Sunday, and that's fine. But his AEW record is thus going to be 2-2. They have 50-50 booked Will Ospreay. And that is from a booking legacy point of view, if 6 months down the road, this is all he's done. And that's one of the prevailing takeaways is how Will Ospreay came to AEW and they 50-50 booked him. I just think that a lot on this show was very reflective of where AEW is at the moment. And it crystallized a lot of AEW's problems in a way that I think all of us collectively, I don't mean just us on the podcast, I think if you look on Twitter, some of the arguments that are being had is a bunch of people trying to, as best they can, and in good faith, articulate some of their problems with AEW. Mm. And then a lot of people very angrily defending it and like piling in. And I feel like that's where most of the divisiveness and like is within the discourse. Summed up a lot on this show because I liked the match but didn't love it. And that was the reason why I was just like kind of grumbling a bit again at Aussie Open being used as these people to lose in Will Ospreay matches because Great O'Khan and Jeff Cobb can't because they're the champions in this super contrived three-way.
Yeah.
Like they could have wrestled with Ospreay as well, but they can't, can they? Because they can't get beat because then that otherwise undermines the match that you've got for the pay-per-view.
And Trent might put himself through a table again, so, you know.
Trent getting loads of wins in order to sort of, I guess, I don't know, validate them after the fact? Is this idea that like, well, who's going to be in this town when you got out of here? Like that old school thing of like,
you got to
remember who's there every week, do you? Can't you just like book this weird, cool collision of stars? FTR, I know they're baby faces now, and there's an honour to making the save on the night and all that. Like, that's kind of where their characters are at the moment, so I can sort of give that a pass, but it still feels like a contrivance that they've been dragged into the best friend's chaos orbit for the benefit of a match when what they want is the belts. The one thing they've made clear from their involvement in any of this is that they want all the title belts they can get because they believe they're the best tag team in the world. It doesn't really factor into saving best friends, does it? It's just quite helpful and fake.
Yeah. Dax, I was going to try and do some kind of Bob Holly thing with Dax and Cash's names. It's gone. I can't get my head around it. Yeah, the bookings are great. There's a natural 50-50, which is an expected political byproduct of cool promotion, but reserve it for people who aren't on the star power level as Will Ospreay.
Yeah. I wouldn't have had him lose any matches.
It sort of feels like in Will Ospreay and Shingo Takagi, New Japan, in what we've witnessed to be the end of like Gedo's golden era as a booker, have become stars nonetheless.
Yes.
Like with clap crowds, difficult situations, they've become two stars out of this particular era of New Japan. You've had one guy come on television and go 50-50. You've had the other not appear at all. Mm. There had to have been a compromise in there where both could have just shone.
Mm. Then we could see if Shin really could go. Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh promo. We've already talked about it. Let's talk instead about the promo that came next. I mean, yeah. It's time for Christian Cage to come out dressed as Adam Nicholas. it's Adam Nicholas. You want to see that comparison on Twitter. Tony Schiavone is in the ring waiting for him. He asks Christian to explain himself after his brutal attack and betrayal of Jungle Boy last week. Huge boos. Tells Milwaukee to shut up so they can hear what he's got to say. There was a bit where I thought, is he going to leave and not talk? Because he's like, no, you don't deserve it. Anyway. And he did, as we've called, pick up on the fact that Jungle Boy was the one who eliminated him from the Casino Battle Royale last year, and the crowd popped for it. He was furious about that. He deserves better. Jungle Boy cost him a bonus, cost him a world title shot. There was a shut the flip up chant at this point. And he makes fun of people tweeting all about it, like they know what goes on. he said, look, I saw potential in Jungle Boy, and that's why I decided to hitch my wagon to him and cash a check. Made loads of money. I didn't have to do anything. He said, look, I'm not here to elevate young talent. I'm here, you know, I'm here to look after myself, to, like I say, to cash a check. And anyone here who is there to elevate young talent, why don't you try having a match that people remember next week? A bit close to the bone there, but okay. He addressed Jungle Boy. He said, look, I was there for you. I was your mentor, blah, blah, blah. And the one time I don't give you pre-match advice, you lose and you lose the tag titles. Tony's like, speaking of social media, actually, you mentioned it earlier. Let's see this clip of you calling Jungle Boy's mom. Saying to Jungle Boy's mom, you bet raised a piece of shit, basically. Which I was glad they reshowed because it pops me every time I see it. Because his sister's there. His sister flips him off, doesn't he? And Jungle Boy's mom like, just like, go away. And he's like, you raised a piece of shit. He said it like three times just to really hammer it home. And he said, look, hey, I'm just asking questions here. I was just giving Jungle Boy's mom the chance to apologize for giving birth to him. And he says, she's a little bit sweet on me, you know.
And like, he said Christian Cage as well, third person. It's always a huge bed.
Jungle Boy, you may want a father figure, but your father's dead. He went there. And he said, enjoy your retirement at 25. He's about to go on when Tarzan Boy hits and out comes Luchasaurus. Christian starts begging off already like a little bitch. And Luchasaurus gets in the ring, starts choking him. And Christian's trying to explain things away, trying to justify, trying to get out of this. And he says, hey, let's talk about this. Remember what happened to Marco? You're like a son to me. And he whispers something to Luchasaurus, gives him a hug. And there's just that great shot that you've seen all over social media of his face smushed up against Luchasaurus. I think, did he wink as well as they were leaving the ring? Did he little turn to the
whole
camera wink?
A smirk.
And they leave together. Your thoughts on all this?
This is tremendous and exceptional. Call me biased. I've been taught how much I've loved Christian Cage throughout this year. But when he says verbatim, each and every one of you...
Didn't he? I forgot to mention
it. It doesn't become a cliche somehow, because I go on Twitter every day, and the each and every one of you promo has never been more justified, has it?
No.
Squared circle as well. Little dickheads. Each and every one of them deserve an absolute verbal scathing evisceration.
Tongue lashing, William Regal.
From Christian Cage here. He was incredible. He told the story perfectly. He outlined his motivations. The thing I was most impressed with, right? Cheap Heat has to be goddamn good to be worth it. The delivery here was great. He actually went there. It did feel like a transgression and not just something that you say. This was perfect because not only did he say that, not only did he generate the reaction, not only did he completely deepen the heft of this program, which was already hugely over given the reaction that Christian Cage received here, it added, in retrospect, to the heft of the story overall. I'd never once grasped, and this is a failure of mine, but well done for adding this aspect to the story. I've never once thought, Jesus Christ, of course, Jungle Boy, who's probably grown up loving watching Christian Cage wrestle and all the rest of it. That's one of the reasons why he's looked up to him so much, and that's why they've bonded. Oh my God, that is genuinely an incredible tweak in retrospect to add heft to this story. So absolutely, undoubtedly, 100%, if you're going to go there, do it for this reason. He was just great. Christian Cage is like my favorite heel of the year, not named Maxwell Jacob Friedman.
And I like the bit, like you say, there's the father figure stuff, because you're completely right, and I had the same revelation as you there. I also like the bit that he sort of walked us near it beforehand. So he went the mother route, obviously, they showed the footage. And all you're thinking is, all right, say she's a horrible person, but don't talk about his dad. And then he goes there. Because I think you and I said, and you've said as well on other podcasts, the concern for us is that he's going to come out and, like he did here, explain everything, justify the sort of long-form process of it all. But all this other stuff, Forbidden Door or Blood and Guts related, is going to happen. And you're going to go, I'm going to sit here next week and go, oh yeah, remember Christian Cage came out last week? This, despite being despicable, appropriately despicable, made sure you remembered this. Like when I was making my notes for this, for example, I was like, well, we've got to talk about the Christian Cage promo, arguably, you know, at the same level of talking about Brian Danielson and bloody Kazuchika Okada, because it was such a memorable moment on this show.
Oh, greatly, man. Best thing on the show. Cedric said it was a failure of you to pick it up. I disagree. I think it's the success of AEW that we used to highlight in nearly all of their programs, that we would predict a thing and then they would come up with something better.
Yeah.
This was great for all the reasons you guys have just outlined, and you only need to watch it to appreciate the content and the delivery. Christian has done this time and time again in his career. He's brilliant at this character. It's much like his wrestling. He has shown you loads and loads of evidence of why he is beloved, and yet is still underrated at all the things he's great at, right? Because he's done this at every stage in his career. This was just, it was so alarming to me as they outlined a story that they put in place a year ago, that they followed and kept up with and timed the payoff to absolute perfection, how this is now representative of about 10% of AEW's output instead of the 90% it used to be. Mm. I made that joke last year and the year before that AEW seemed to have that one housemate that nobody really liked, and it just meant that all sort of hatred could be channeled towards that one housemate to ensure that there was no other little petty like gripes coming up elsewhere, because it's like, oh, I just don't like that one person.
Matt Hardy.
The Codyverse.
You couldn't even stop containing that.
The Codyverse. It was looking like it was going to be Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti. And then gradually what's happened is that you start looking for the really good stuff instead. Mm. It's flipped the other way. And that's such a shame and so dangerous. And it can flip back and things can get good again. But what I think the majority of people felt was just what AEW used to make you feel in 90% of the output, which was just them carefully crafting these stories, having wrestling matches be an important part of it, but ultimately good booking. You know, good stories and good booking playing out. It trumps everything. Good booking always trumps everything in pro wrestling. You know, the best matches. The Revolution tag match is as great as it is because of all the booking wrapped around it. You know, it's a fantastic tag match. But the Young Bucks, they haven't got that in their pocket every week, but they've got something pretty close to it in their pocket every single week. But the booking is what makes all the difference. And that was what made the difference here. That's what elevated this. That's why it's a talking point on the level of how much time we would normally spend on like one of those classic MJFC and Punk epics that we were doing at the time. And it just, I don't know, I loved the bones of this. And yet I felt a little bit sad. I was like, this is the standard. Here it is, right? Yeah. Laid bare. When we talk about standards, this is the standard. Almost nothing else on this card, and you consider the build into a pay-per-view, and a huge Dynamite next week, nothing touched this. And it's because a lot of it feels forced, a lot of it feels a bit fake, a lot of it feels about a month old. They feel like feuds that are not really feuds. You know, at the moment, you're in a pattern of, I've done it on Twitter today, I've got myself in bother with some like New Japan hardcores, but this idea of Okada regaining the belt on Sunday just so you can have Kenny Omega come out and face, and that's me fantasy booking something, because Paige and Cole are on the outside, and maybe they've thought enough to have the people that Kenny's most related to be ringside as he makes his return, you know, but that's me trying to pull stuff out of what has felt fairly haphazard and rushed. This Christian Cage stuff isn't haphazard and rushed. It's exactly what we saw, and then they've peppered more details in. The outwork everything, outwork everyone becoming working everybody.
Oh, him, t-shirt, that's
him
awesome.
Going full Kevin Nash about the money in the miles, and the idea that he came. Like, this plays on a criticism of AEW, of guy, too many ex-WWE guys coming in and just being able to take a payday. Christian did it and tried to do it, and then he's found himself having to actually GD wrestle. It's like, right, well, I guess I'll like have a shortcut to the top and win a battle royal. And then he can't even do that. So Jungle Royal has derailed his, like, what did he do on his first night in AEW? Not the, like, I'm here. He picked up the AEW title. He told us, he like, and I was critical of that. I was like, oh, God, like, a TNA guy coming in, you know, I'm here from WWE, I'm going to win the belt. But that even that has been proven, like, sort of, to make storyline sense. He didn't want to piss about. He wanted to make the money and get the belt. And Jungle Boy has frigging derailed that, and it sat with him for a year. The one thing I want them to do now, and I believe there's story to this, is get there quicker on the Marco stunt detail that was dropped in here with Luchasaurus and whatever it is that, like, we used to see, like, Abyss in TNA get control. The corporation used to take control of Kane. You can have where, like, a heel manages a monster for a bit, and they might do that here with Luchasaurus. And Christian Cage was always great with Tyson Tomko as his heater as well. So Luchasaurus...
I was about to say, do you think he whispered Tyson Tomko?
Well, Luchasaurus as his heater is just interesting. Like, whatever is going to draw them together now is interesting. The Marco stuff you've got to be careful with, because Christian, as a character, says, remember what happened to Marco? And me, a fan, remembers what happened to Marco. Tony Khan ghosted him and he got released. Or his contract wasn't renewed. That's what happened to Marco. So you've got to draw that into story.
I thought he was going to get him on The Voice.
Well, you've got to be careful with that, because you run the risk of it veering into Liv Morgan saying, hey, Becky Lynch, your wage is why my friend doesn't have jobs. Like, no, it doesn't. Like, that's not...
They've got millions and millions.
That's not real. So I hope there's a good story to follow up, because otherwise that starts to feel a bit flippant. Rest of this. This is AEW. The rest of this Dynamite wasn't really AEW, but this was. Mm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Right, the Young Bucks and Cool Kyle O'Reilly are backstage. They say, look, everything's right in the world now. We're champs again, blah, blah, blah. And they announce they are going to be on Forbidden Door. I think Kyle O'Reilly said he wasn't medically cleared or something like that. He's pissed off at what's happened with Sting, though. And they reveal that Sting, quote, and his cronies at Forbidden Door are going to face the team of the Young Bucks, Hikuleo, and the brilliant El Fantasmo. More WCPW guys being added. Shaping him to be a good show.
No offense, right? Because I think he's kind of impressed and he's clearly a project. And I understand that bookers want to get projects over. But when I heard that on Busted Open, of course, Tony Khan had said, we're going to do like four, which was misheard apparently as more, but more Forbidden Door matches will be announced. when the second New Japan wrestler named was Hikuleo. I was like, Jesus Christ. Then this match becomes awesome. This match can be incredible, by the way. Like, genuinely, you don't know how incredible it's going to be. Incredible. But I was a little bit miffed at this point in the show before it all got a bit better.
Yeah, should we do it together, actually? Might as well do it together. Because later on in the show, after Tony Storm versus Marina Shafir, Darby Allin and Sting were backstage. Darby says he doesn't think Kyle O'Reilly isn't medically cleared. He's just scared. But they've brought some crazies of their own for that eight-man at Forbidden Door. It is going to be Sting, Darby Allin, Shingo, and Hiromu Takahashi. And it's going to be showtime at Forbidden Door.
Yeah.
I immediately thought of you the moment he said Shingo, obviously.
Yeah, like they should have completely sold Shingo more. But that's by the by. He's going to show you why they should have put him over more on Sunday. He's just the absolute best. He's got the best rope run you'll ever see. If you've never seen Shingo, like, you're in for an absolute
treat. I don't
think
I actually have. Have I seen Shingo?
Yeah.
I don't know, have you?
I just think things that, like, I'm guilty of this all the time. Is I should watch more New Japan, and you know, heap praise on it, not just now, but in terms of like legacy stuff. And I don't think I've ever gone back and watched.
You should watch Shingo,
a match. So maybe Sunday.
I recommend one for you.
When New Japan was still operating at close to peak, he was mainly in the juniors division, and he's just built like a tank. It's the best of Super Juniors final with Ospreay, wasn't
2019,
it?
2019,
Is it like when you see, like, you know, kid, one of those kids who've just, like, far too big for their year playing rugby?
Yeah.
But yeah, well, join us on Sunday. I will try and watch the Shingo match in preparation that you send me, Sige. But join us on Sunday for the live stream and watch Shingo with us, potentially, for the first time. What Culture Wrestling on YouTube, of course. But yeah, all I can think of is you with Takahashi and Shingo being added.
Absolutely. They should have just really put them like, wow, we've got these guys. What I like about this match as well, I'll tell you about in the preview because we're probably going to go one.
Okay. Anything you want to say about this?
No, I wish it, Forbidden Door in general had been more this from the beginning. I wish that, like, this match took zero setting up, realistically, didn't it? Like, Kyle O'Reilly is selling injured wows from Rampage, like, and they've managed to craft an eight-man tag that doesn't even feature him as a result of Sting hitting him with a bat. Like, you could have, this is the sort of stuff where you could have dropped graphics really early on and made, just built a load of anticipation instead of feeling the need to try and tell stories to get us to this card. This is reflective of kind of where this card should have been from the beginning.
Yep.
Time for the All-Atlantic Championship qualifier, who will join Miro Pack and Tomohiro Ishii on Sunday in that four-way. It was Penta Escuro versus Malakai Black. They just obviously have got a bit of a story history, these guys together, so they just start brawling straight away. Penta hits a thrust kick. Black goes for a dive, but he counters that and hits a tope of his own. Penta hits a backstabber to get a two-count, but I think this was the point in the match where it seemed like he'd hurt his back on the dive, and that would play into the match a little bit later on. Sling blade from Penta, but then Black baits him out to the floor and trips him up on the apron, takes control, takes us to a break. When we come back, they're fighting on the apron. Penta wants the Penta driver, but Black fights out of it. Penta gets out of the way of a heel kick. He hits an enziguri, hits a rolling cutter. That gets a near fall as well. An Arihara moonsault from Black, followed by a top rope double stomp, gets him a two count. Black goes up top. Penta cuts him off, though, and hits an avalanche fear factor, which both men sell like death, understandably. When Penta finally makes it over to the pin, Black can just get his foot onto the ropes to break it up. Penta goes for a follow-up to that, but his back gives out, and Black hits the heel kick out of nowhere for the 1-2-3. Post-match, Pack comes down to have a face-off with Black, and Miro appears on the screen and basically says, I'm going to kill all of you so you can tell God from me that I'm coming for him. Coming for him. So it is going to be Pac, Miro, Malakai Black, and Tomohiro Ishii, as we called.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think it was a particularly bold call, but we did call it. I think a lot of people did. I'm not taking a victory lap on that. I will do on various other things, of course. I've got no shame. I liked one of Miro's lines more than the actual match itself. For whatever reason, there were some really cool spots in it, but I just didn't feel that click of, this is awesome, I'm locked in, I can't take my eyes off it, my heart rate is accelerating as the speed of the action is. And they did, I just didn't really feel like this was an amazing match. Thought it was good to very good, but I wasn't like mad keen on it, and I don't know why that was. There's a few wonky-ish sequences that you can sometimes get from Penta, where sometimes his timing isn't so bob on. when you work an ambitious style like he does, when the timing's not perfect, it can feel a little bit glaring. Miro calling Malakai Black a pagan is my favourite thing, I think, of all time this week. It's so consistent with his, like, sort of... What's that God-fearing character? Like, God fears Miro or whatever. Like,
yeah, he was God-fearing. Now he thinks himself as a god.
He could deck God.
Calling Malakai Black the pagan is the best thing ever. I love it so much, and I pop for that. I'm going to tell you why this match is going to be awesome on the preview, and why it's going to be better than this match between Penta and Malakai.
Also, shout out to Big Mike, no, not that one, on Twitter, who I read this tweet today. I forgot to include it in their Twitter questions on the news. He pitched Julia Hart as the Alex Abrahantes of the House of Black. And I was like, what? But he said, when Malakai talks rubbish, she can say, Malakai means, and just explain it all. And I was like, that's a genius move, that. So shout out to her.
Penta says Malakai means. Yeah. That's incredible.
It's really good.
But what did you make of all this, Hamlet?
Mostly the same as Sidgwick. I thought this was good, never great. The work was good enough from these two, but again, it didn't reach the peak of what we've seen in the multi-man matches, which is maybe an unfair expectation because there is just more of them, and you don't get a chance to catch your breath in those matches. So sometimes we're not overrating the spots. They're incredible. But it just goes bang, 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 that you've, like, one might sort of almost like sneak in. Whereas without that, there had to be breaks in play a little bit in the singles match. I do like watching Malakai Black when he feels like he can be super hard hitting, and he certainly does against Penta. Penta is a guy that will give his body to the cause, or in this case, no cause at all, because I thought this match was an achievement more than anything else. There was zero stakes because nobody gives a toss about the All Atlantic title. It was wholly predictable because Penta's pretty much out and out said, or Andrade did, and you can thus apply that to other wrestlers. Well, we cannot work the show. So there was no doubt who was going to win the match. So in that sense, it was an achievement that they kind of like extracted any drama from this whatsoever. And yeah, like I say, I think Malakai Black did it by hitting so hard, and Penta did it by being like, well, I will make this look as good as I possibly can.
Avalanche fear factor.
Ooh. Let's kill each other for it, you know? So I was kind of impressed by them both then. Miro's pagan line, he has done this over and over again. Man's a poet.
He
finds the words 100% of the time that apply to this individual match he's trying to build. He's incredible. I don't care about this belt, but I can't wait for him to win it and see if he can elevate it.
Yes.
Like, I kind of trust him more than just about anyone else's company to do it.
Did he say, am I golden, my girl, or something? There was some nice bit of alliteration in there I liked as well, yeah.
He's brilliant at that.
There's a video promo from Wardlow talking about Wardlow's world, and he's going to welcome Scorpio Sky into it when he eventually is healed so they can fight for the TNT Championship. And then it was time for Hangman Page versus a bit of a legend from Ring of Honor, Silas Young, with Adam Cole Bebe on commentary. Bit of a warm-up match, of course, for Hangman Page. Well, we didn't know it was a warm-up match, actually, as I say that, until afterwards.
It's very contrived that it happened, isn't it?
Yes.
Very contrived.
So the back and forth stuff early on. I love the look of Silas Young, by the way. Mm. There's a manic whose moustache I can really appreciate.
He already had a butcher, but whatever.
Yeah, granted. There was a brief second when he walked down.
About 300 wrestlers he needs to cycle through.
There was a brief second where he walked down. I went, oh, cool, it's the butcher. And then
cool, it's the butcher.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I just thought, and then I was just like, wait a second, something's wrong. And then it's Silas Young. I was like, that's why. So Paige sends Silas Young out to the floor and hits an Arihara moonsault to take us to a break early on, during which Young takes over, but once we come back, Paige makes his comeback hitting a superplex. He hits the fall away slam, he kips up, he lariats Young out to the floor. Paige hits a plancha, he hits a diving clothesline. Once they get back inside, that gets him a near fall. Young hits a backbreaker and a nice lariat for a two count as well. Goes for his corner moonsault, but Paige avoids it, hits a German, hits the buckshot lariat. 1, 2, 3. Let's do this in two parts because it's all too complicated otherwise. Your thoughts on the match first.
I like this match more than the prior match. I like this more than Penta and Malakai Black. Not because the action was quite as full on or as constant, but just because the pairing was so much fresher. Like, I haven't seen these two wrestlers interact before. So I was grateful, if nothing, I'm being critical of the fact that this roster is too big or there's too many people to cycle through if you include the Ring of Honor guys and the a Ring of Honor guy on a show where you've got to build a pay-per-view between AEW and New Japan. Jesus Christ, what are they thinking?
Right?
But Silas Young made a good account of himself, and at least they did explain that he's from Wisconsin, right? So the local crowd were going to be kind to him. That was a particularly weird choice that I want to believe is on purpose, because there have been some... Hangman Page has been getting some mixed reactions. He was feuding with CM Punk, so of course he's going to get some mixed reactions there. That's kind of continued a little bit, coming off the back of the pay-per-view, where he's, you know, like he was a bitchy, wasn't he? About not getting,
he's been
not getting put in the battle royal. Like, but he had a reason.
Absolutely justified.
I'm on his side, by the way. But he was kind of a bit neggy about that. He was almost mirroring MJF's tone towards Tony Khan, wasn't he, in that promo that he cut? And then he has this match with a hometown favourite where he's still got to remain babyface. What I do like about this is Hangman Page has basically lost the title and gone and got back to work. I do think they're telling something like a bit longer term with Page here about he's not really licking his wounds. He's got back to business. He's probably at some point going to flag up. Hang on, why am I back not number one in the rankings again? I want a title shot with CM Punk. Like this guy that couldn't even stay fit a week with that belt. I've been working ever since and I'm ready for him. And it kind of plays into this criticism he had of Punk in the first place. And so I want to believe that they're going somewhere with this. And it is like, it's Page, so there's focus on him. And it's just, you're not supposed to see it yet, but it's the long-term arc for him. And I think that's why I like the match more, because it just felt like a guy that is going out there to work every week and is willing to take on any opponent. And I say that because it was David Finlay the last time. So he's like, bring me someone from New Japan. Bring me someone from Ring of Honor. It does not matter. I'll go out there. I'll wrestle every week. I'll get myself back up the rankings. And I'll prove that I'm the world champion elect even when I've not got the belt around my waist. So I liked a lot of this. It's still problematic that you've got so many guys and so little time. And Silas Young kind of fell into that category as well.
Yeah, he's not going to get a deal or anything like that.
Is Ring of Honor going to get one?
I know. I really, really, really liked this, and I kind of liked it for reasons that I'm not entirely sure they were really working towards or deliberately trying to do. But the idea is that the storied history in Ring of Honor, and now Hangman Page has absolutely lapped him in terms of star power, how much money he makes, how good he is as a wrestler, how like his profile and all the rest of it. Silas Young's got this kind of weird dichotomy about him where he's the real last man and yet he does like kind of like super indie stuff in his matches, so there is a bit of a dissonance there, but he kind of almost failed a couple of spots where he's trying to do this stuff and it just genuinely had a little bit of heft to, oh, he is the older man who's been lapped and he can't really do it, and Hangman Page has really got him where he wants him. So when they did the odd thing that was just got over the line to execute the final bit of a flip or of a sequence, I just thought it was a real emotional resonance to this, and I was really, really into it. Good bit of business, this.
We're going to talk about what came next, though, because immediately Cole walks out onto the ramp and says, it's time for story time with Adam Cole, baby. But he gets immediately interrupted himself by Switchblade Jay White, who walks out with the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship and says, look, I've been giving a lot of thought to Forbidden Door. Cole, you can't be a challenger at Forbidden Door because you lost to Hangman Page twice. And he walks down to the ring and he walks and goes face to face with Hangman Page and says, it's not going to be you either. Big brawl breaks out. Cole gets involved. Page sets up for the buckshot, but he gets low blowed and they two beat him down. The two of them beat him down. There's a moment where it looks like Cole picks up the IWGP Heavyweight Championship and he's going to twat Switchblade with it. But instead, now they hold Page up in position. They're going to take him out. When finally we hear the coin drop and out comes Kazuchika Okada. He walks down, he fights off Switchblade and Cole. Him and Page stand tall. He's even going to even hit the Rainmaker on Switchblade, but he gets out of it. Okada's music plays to end the segment. And subsequently, we find out it's going to be a four-way between the four men for the world title on Sunday. So I suppose technically Switchblade was right. He's not going to face Hangman Page or Adam Cole. He's going to face them, face Hangman Page and Adam Cole. Oh, and by the way, Kazuchika Okada.
Piss poor. Yeah. This is piss poor. I'm sorry.
Was in your ups and downs, wasn't it? You were talking about this morning.
A major. That worst kind of, I'm not going to fight you or you. I'm going to fight both of you is the worst kind of, ha-ha, fooled you, WWE schlock. The worst kind of that.
This is the worst and most poorly built New Japan Pro Wrestling main event, IWGP title match, whatever you want to call it, until since they've completely destroyed the G1 climax to facilitate a two-night Wrestle Kingdom. What are they thinking with this? It's so fed. It was never up to Jay White, and it never was, so why are they dicking around on my television,
my time. You don't deserve a shot, no, do you? And here's why. Don't say that bit when you're going to make the match anyway.
I know.
I can't believe they said it out loud.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. At the very least, if you're going to do the whole, you know, Adam Wilborn, you're a complete cock, but you're good in the ring. You know that weird wrestling
this is
thing?
Babe, yeah?
You're not good in the ring. but you are a cock, so...
Okay,
we'll call it
50-50 booking.
Or a work shoot, whichever you like. Whichever you like.
Yeah, I'll take that.
If you're going to do that bit, right, is a thing of, oh, I'm not, yeah, you might have won the own. Remind people that wrestlers are good when you are promoting them in your wrestling promotion. Jay White's got this quality, man, where like every now and then I'm thinking, you're amazing and I should invest way more deeply in you than I do. And then you see this version of Jay White and you think, maybe you should have won NXT in 2019 when it was mooted. Because what are you thinking, mate? That's you're not telling a good story here. You're absolutely not telling a good story. You're not the big prodigy when you're coming out with stuff like this. Build your opponent. Come on, you're meant to be like he's meant to be the 45-year-old in the 20-year-old's body, where it's like he's realized. Wouldn't it be awesome if a wrestler was so clever at crafting matches and developing his ring psychology and his crowd psychology that by the time he's in his wrestler's prime, he'll have a mind like no other? That's the big genius bit about Jay White. And sometimes he doesn't really feel like a genius to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. And it's what I think, where this has done quite significant damage, I think, to AEW's, the loyalty that AEW fans once had for this brand is that the inevitable, once there was even a mooted relationship between New Japan, the inevitability of the magic of the coin drop was something that all of us were like permitted and encouraged to speculate on. This was fine. Like there was a big pop in the building. I'd been up off my seat if I was in that building. So they got our reaction, but they definitely didn't get the reaction.
It wasn't as good as Andy Murray's booking.
No, it wasn't as good as Murray's booking. It wasn't as good as every bit of booking you've seen for the last 12 months about when Okada finally debuts in AEW. And that's on them. You know, they should be grateful for the pop it received, because the pop was as a result of Okada's star power, not as a result of anything that assembled to maximize it. And again, WWE gets these all the time. Like they can generate a noise, right? They can bring somebody back, or they can like rely on an old star for a Raw reunion or whatever. People still pop in WWE shows.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes you watch a Raw and you won't believe that statement because it's just it's funeral atmosphere. But like people will still pop at WWE shows when the right thing happens, or when they just, that's why they love their moment so much, because it's just about the only thing that like draws an emotion from their audience. AEW is supposed to get it for everything, you know, and they were kind of stealing one here. They were stealing one because Okada's here. It's like the Undertaker's dong going off in a building if people haven't seen him live before. That's what this was in terms of your delivery of Okada. It was also a bit of a failure in terms of a television presentation and execution, because people came away still not knowing what the main event was. It wasn't until Excalibur's wrap up.
I was going to say, they sort of clarified it later, didn't they? Yeah, it wasn't here that they said,
for the
wrap
up where you finally knew what your match official. Was. I want a little minute on that Excalibur wrap up this week, by the way. Yeah. There's some more I want to talk about with that specifically, but like,
is he all right?
Well, you'd hope so. But yeah, it was just, this was, unfortunately, this was every bit as disappointing as it stood a chance of being, because we were all low on it in the first place.
In the in-depth Forbidden Door preview that we'll record later this afternoon, I'm going to tell you exactly why we might actually see two of the very best four-way matches of all time at Forbidden Door. But at the same time, with the possible exception of the main event, which they've actively detracted from with the booking, there's not a single match on this card where I'm thinking, oh my God, after 2 years of these companies being at odds, the relationship was not good at one point. And after like over a full year of distanced crowds, or Austin Gunn or Neewon, New Japan and AEW are finally going to do a co-promoted show. There's not a single match on this card where I'm going to feel, I can't believe this one is actually happening.
Brian and Kenny on your birthday felt more like Worlds Collided.
Yes,
than anything
that's
on this
a
show.
Great point.
Like Brian was WWE for long enough. He was Ring of Honor before that. And Kenny has never been either. He was Ring of Honor like briefly, but like never really been associated with AEW in New Japan, really. And that was that, as much as that was the
in DDT, you'd be offended. Yeah. Don't offend Kenny.
Yes, yeah. It wasn't just these two masters coming together of pro wrestling. It was these Worlds Colliding that you just never thought possible.
Yeah.
The majority of this card should feel like you never thought. The example I gave you earlier on, like this is slightly Forbidden Door preview, but I don't want to just go two-footed on that preview. The example I gave you this morning when we came in the office, Wilborn, I was talking about the Invasion, right? A reasonable comparison to make, the Invasion pay-per-view that drew a ton of money because of the idea of it, right? Because it certainly wasn't about the card. Right? The inaugural ball was a big match. Jeff Hardy versus Rob Van Dam was definitely one of their matches where it was like, yes, that's you've nailed that. People did not go, oh, yes, the APA can finally fight Palumbo and O'Hare. Or like, this was the match that I was thinking of. Billy Gunn, Big Show, and Albert finally get their hands on Canyon and Sean Stasiak and a guy I've already forgotten. Finally, the Nick Patrick Earl Hebner match we've dreamed of.
Yeah.
That wasn't what it was about. It was the big picture of like, oh, worlds are colliding. Doesn't matter who you are. That was the one show where you could absolutely put your WCW t-shirt on and be like, right, they're team WCW, they're team WWF, they're going to batter each other. And this card has failed quite profoundly to arrive at one match that makes you feel that way.
Just to circle back to an earlier point, if I'm a cock, do you know what that makes you? You guys.
These nuts.
It was time for Jade Cargill, Stokely Hathaway, the baddies. Red Velvet's injured, wish her well in her recovery. And Stokely said they're looking for a new baddie. Oh, pick me. they have to be a top-notch bitch.
We arrived at this on Twitter last night before they even said this. It's Shaq.
Yes, you did see. I saw it.
It's Shaq. He's going to return out the ambulance as a baddie.
Yeah.
I love it. Tony, cut the and then they cut, like you say, to Chris Statlander and Athena, and they mock this opportunity to become a baddie. So nobody's going to get in their way, and then Athena concludes with Jade, cut the shit.
Babyface is lording over now, having a numerical advantage.
Cool. It's 2-on-2.
I guess, yeah. I suppose, but could they not bring Willow Nightingale back in? As an association?
They mentioned her, didn't they? Yes.
Yeah, that was alluded to, that they've got Willow as well.
What happened to Anna Jay?
Yeah, well,
she was in this loose affiliation.
She lost her best friend to CAC, so she got to do something. She brought her old gimmick back at the paper.
Yeah, but no, she was involved in all this. Mm-hmm. Now she's just not. I quite like top notch bitch. It's like that. I like that collection of words. It's good. Mm. It's like that. That's what I'm looking for. Like top notch describes like a really good like sort of. 6 or 4 on cricket, I was top notch.
Yeah.
Putting that next to bitch.
Yeah.
I like that.
Do you know what, as well? Just while I remember, I'm pretty sure we said this on a podcast. So it's a bit of patting ourselves in the back. If we didn't, I know we were thinking it because I know we talked about it in the office. This might scan as a hot take. I'm not sure. I never thought it was right from the beginning and I still don't think it now. I don't think Stokely Hathaway and Jade Cargill is the right pairing. There are lots of people on this roster that would benefit from Stokely Hathaway and Jade just because it's like. Just because it made sense on paper, I don't think one needs the other. And I don't. Jade Cargill can speak in a way that actively restricts the need for Stokely Hathaway to do so. People really like his promos. Mm-hmm. Give him to somebody that actually needs him because you just. It's like, what is it? Subtraction by addition in both cases.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that here. Jade Cargill carried this by herself. And if Stokely Hathaway is just standing there again, is that not the problem that like we found with him in NXT all the time? If he's just standing there with a bunch of people that don't need him. You're not getting the best out of him.
I've made a horrible mistake here. I forgot about our game. I didn't write down the timing of when the Marina Shafir theme was hit. I think it was earlier than we anticipated.
Just, I might have taken a screenshot.
They gave us quite a long main event, and obviously all the fallout from that. And with the ad breaks, I feel like it was probably earlier than both me and Sidge anticipated.
Ladies' corner.
Yes. I'll talk you through the match.
I've got it. That says the problem, correct?
Correct.
1 hour, 21 minutes and 43 seconds. Now, Wilborn.
Do you remember what we said? I don't remember.
I said 1 hour. Well, I'll write it down because I'm a professional. Yeah. 1 hour, 29 minutes and 34 seconds. But the winner of today's, we need a name for the game. Why haven't we got...
Ladies' time.
And this is ladies' time. So we have to do that every single time now for the week. So
this is your time to remember. Otherwise, it's going to be all shit.
And this is ladies' night. And then one night. So, just to reiterate.
Did I miss the AW 2.0 preview yesterday?
No, it kind of spilled into that, yeah.
So, we used to play the game when you watched 24 on DVD when you were a student. Okay. And it goes, ding, 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 ding. It's like 14 minutes.
Yeah.
And then what?
You remember 24 with Bruce Prichard doing the
and then, do, 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 do. And then, like, what is the time going to be when it returns from adverts?
Okay, right.
Yeah. And you'd always, like, when you were a second off, it was, when you get it right, it's the biggest buzz. So we're going to do that now for every time you hear the first bit of the entrance music for the first woman making their appearance for the only singles match. It's the joke is it's around about the same time every week. So that is the explanation behind the game. Like, and this is ladies that So that's the game.
You've just given me a really lovely potent university memory there. We used to play the Hollyoaks game. So Hollyoaks was on, everybody would be around sort of having their tea. And Hollyoaks used to have this habit, because the end music would, you'd have the credits, and then there'd be this one last scene before their bit at the end, where like the wacky music would end. And Hollyoaks was so totally all over the shop. Some weeks it'd be like, you know, this character falls through the floor. And it's like, he's like, help us, I've fallen over and dropped all the beer. And then other weeks it's like, I'm dealing with really significant trauma and I think you need to call the police. And we'd like, while the credits roll, and everybody had to pick, right, what storyline from the episode was going to be focused to be given the big finish.
Was that, do you think the MCU got that from Hollyoaks? You know, like the stick around after the head, the stick around.
I think the MCU wishes it was artistically as credible as Hollyoaks.
I think so as well. just one more university thing.
I love it, yeah.
Before we go, we had my best mate Alex, love her. She had the ground floor in our sort of small residence in first year. And whenever we used to get a takeaway, it would just knock on the door of the front of the building. And then they realized, because one of the drivers went too far down the bank that it was on, that we were just like, she had a window. So for the last month of first year, every takeaway was just like through the window delivery. We didn't have to do anything except open it up. Cheers. There we go. More 24 in between the wild pies.
So it's time for Marina Shafir versus Toni Storm. Back and forth early on. Storm gets sent to the floor by Shafir. And Nyla Rose, who's for some reason out there, nails her with this running senton when the referee's not looking. When we come back, Storm hits that headbutt of hers. And Shafir just no-sells it and continues to beat her up on the floor. Storm fights back with the tornado DDT. She hits a German hip attack and then rolls Shafir up for the 1-2-3. Post-match, Shafir and Rose beat her up. And then in reverse of what we've seen before, Thunder Rosa runs out to make the save. Storm uses the belt to dispatch Nyla Rose. And there's the belt and the stare down and the pay-per-view and what have you. And I'm just intrigued to know what you both think looking at your faces here.
This was like AEW X NXT Black and Gold Forbidden Door. Not only do you have, what's Nyla Rose doing there? Why has she made some real...
Got a take on that in a minute.
Shafir.
You're not going to like it.
Is it a good one?
Well, I think it's a reasonable one, but I wish it wasn't.
Right. And I'm thinking, well, right, okay. So associates of wrestlers are there just because they're there. It facilitates things if they are there. Then you get the belt staring and then Jesus Christ. The match itself, I was quite high on. I said yesterday I was going to sell my stock on the Shafir Chancer if she didn't step up, because I've heard about this dark run. I've seen glimpses in the Jade Cargill match, but I just don't simply think that you've got time to dick about with prospects in this women's division anymore. You just don't. And I'm sick of seeing obvious winners in matches where it's like, good snap. I'm not watching it as a coach. I'm watching it as a fan. I'm sick of seeing it. Like, I need this all-star approach that I've made up in my head that has to happen. But good account of herself. Toni Storm at various points looked like she was in trouble and not guiding Shafir through a respectable TV match.
I was lower on the match, actually. It was better than the... Of course, it was better than the Thunder Rosa one. They had to like literally break bread on Twitter to make it clear that they weren't hated, feared enemies. But it's something to do with, I think they're still, because I've seen a bit of Shafir on this dark elevation run, where I think it's something to do with her style and then figuring out how to make it work in the context of pro wrestling.
Mm.
This MMA background thing, it looks clunky and it looks rough. And sometimes it reminds you why wrestling's fake, because wrestling looks good. And I think sometimes that could be me being generous, by the way, and Shafir could sometimes be a bit lapsed on her execution. But I think sometimes it's supposed to look like she's like out-muscling people and out-strengthening people. And you watch your MMA World Bond, and a lot of the time I'm sitting there like really bored, unless they're kicking each other's heads off, because I'm having to watch like this technical thing, you know, like, and I just don't understand it. And I sort of feel like sometimes Shafir's matches fall apart in an effort to look legit, because that's the style of hers they're trying to get across. And she's just not Shayna Baszler or Ronda Rousey in how you turn that into pro wrestling. That might be generous, so sometimes it might just be rubbish. The in response to the Nyla Rose being there with Marina Shafir, they have had Rose and Shafir be allies and tag partners on Dark and Dark of Late.
I have been keeping up with those shows of late.
Yeah, I haven't kept up with them ever, and no one explained this to me.
I've been watching them regularly for the first time ever, right, recently, because I've just been like a bit like disillusioned with AEW's main product, and I've found that I'm actually quite enjoying just seeing a raft of matches. Some of them aren't very good. A couple of them are great. They've also done this with Serena Deeb and Mercedes Martinez to definitely build to a Ring of Honor title match. But as a tag team, they're class. They're like,
aren't they on Rampage this week?
They're basically competing with each other to see who's better in that way where they kind of don't trust one another. And it's like, I'll do it. But then in the meantime, you're getting these awesome moments where it's like, well, we're doing this cool double team, but it's mainly because of me. Well, actually, because it's me. While meantime, some poor jobber's screaming for the life. It's good stuff, right? Anna Jay previously, I forget who she was with. Athena and Chris Statlander have obviously been pretty much paired together since Athena debuted. The baddies before Red Velvet's injury, and now I guess adding another baddie is the idea, is that they're going to be a tag team underneath Jade. I'm starting to think they might be wanting to introduce women's tag titles.
It suddenly dawned on me as you were running through that.
You are assembling enough pairs to, like, in their minds, justify more belts, more tournaments.
You're going to say WWE would have had belts about three tag teams before you mentioned them.
And
Sid's world's crumbling.
And based on the Mid-Atlantic title and the trios. The All-Atlantic title, the trios that will happen, suddenly there is precedence of being like, you know what we need? AEW Dynamite, we need more titles.
That's what fixes it.
Might it's just my speculation.
Who won the timing game? We never got to the bottom of that.
You did.
Yay! So just enjoy the world building that's going on at the moment, guys, yeah?
It's a reverse of me, yeah, when they had more belts. This is where we got the Darby Allin and Sting and the Shingo and Hiromu Takahashi addition to Forbidden Door. And then we got Excalibur running through everything that ever existed.
Poor bastard malfunctioned. He absolutely malfunctioned. My heart was broken for him here.
He did. It was quite funny when, like, bless him, he hit a wall. He's been due. Like, he's more than entitled to hit this wall after all these weeks of doing this. Nobody's watching Rampage anymore, right? And interest is low in this pay-per-view. But what happens every week? This segment gets clipped. It's become a weekly meme. And if you look at the view count on these videos, it's in at the hundreds of thousands of hours. People want to watch Excalibur racing through, right? If you at this point have become the dreaded casual fan, the casual observer that is absolutely not making time on a Friday for these wet inessential Rampage episodes, you always know what's happening because you're always watching this video of Excalibur losing his goddamn mind on a Dynamite. So I think this was
peak though, wasn't it? Because it was this week, next week, because of Blood and Guts and the pay.
They've made a bit out of the poor bastard suffering. It happened one week where we were all like, Jesus Christ, this is taking the piss a bit. And now it's every week in the spot by design for somebody to clip. And you can, after you've watched Dynamite and people are like uploading their favourite bits, you are guaranteed to see near the top tweets this. I think they're doing it so like, this is Tony Khan's brain all the time. What you witness in that minute and a half of Excalibur going, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. It's just, that's Tony Khan's existence. He's like, how can I get that to the people? And it's like, I can make Excalibur lose his goddamn mind for a minute and a half on Dynamite, and then somebody will tweet it. I think it's now, what we're witnessing, it's supposed to be this. It's not, we might view it as like, what is going on in this frigging company? And Tony Khan's going, why don't people understand what's going on in this company? And he's found a way to make it work.
And I've said it a million times before, Tony Khan needs to goddamn realise soon not everyone has got the same level of energy and enthusiasm as he does. It's out of touch stuff with the people.
Yeah.
Genuinely, it's not just a meme of Excalibur doing this. It's like, look at the main event post-match. Jesus Christ.
Well, let's get to it because we are at the main event now. It's Chris Jericho and Lance Archer. Sammy Guevara and Tay Conti came out with, it was a split second. You know, they had the far away shot and Chris Jericho's on there and Sammy's on one side and Tay's on the other. And I was like, it's cool, Danny. Cool hand and stressed us there. And then you get the Moxley entrance and the Tanahashi entrance, and Regal's on commentary. And Moxley and Tanahashi eventually meet at the bottom of the ramp. And there's a sort of knowing look between the two of them about the fact they're going to go to war on Sunday. But for now, we've got to deal with these bell ends. And they attack before the bell. Moxley and Jericho brawl out on the floor. Tanahashi and Archer face off in the ring, and Archer just brutalizes him early on. Full Nelson bomb. In comes Jericho. Tanahashi regains control. He tags in Moxley, who nails some elbows and bites Jericho's face. They brawl outside, but as they're going back in, Sammy Guevara trips Moxley, and that's allowing Jericho and Archer to take him out and take control. Sort of pounce here from Chris Jericho to John Moxley. They beat him down throughout the commercial break. When they come back, Moxley gets the knees up on the Jericho lion salt, gets over to Tanahashi, hot tag for him. He comes down, takes out both opponents, running elbows, springing crossbody, bit of air guitar in there. Tanahashi keeps up the attack, flipping senton, gets him a two count. Jericho fights back, tries to put him in the walls, but Tanahashi fights out, hits a code breaker, but Moxley has to come in to break up the pin, and then he takes out Archer with a tope suicida. Tanahashi avoids the Judas effect, hits a code breaker his own, goes for the high fly flow, a standing one, but Jericho rolls through and puts him in the walls, and it's just on for ages, and he's just torturing him. Tanahashi eventually manages to escape. Then there's just this parade of big moves from all the blokes. A sling blade from Tanahashi, in come Moxley and Archer. Huge strikes. Moxley fights out of the blackout, hits a paradigm shift, tags Tanahashi, high fly flow. 1, 2, 3. I'm just going to talk about what happened afterwards here anyway, because it was the schmosh to end all schmozzers. Eddie Kingston and Wheeler Yuta run down and brawl with Jericho and Guevara because of blood and guts. Minoru Suzuki comes out looking like a maniac, as he always does. He beats down Wheeler Yuta. And then who came out next? It's Moxley's mate. I can always forget what his name is.
Shooter!
He comes out and gets involved. Officials are there trying to break it all up. The Jericho Appreciation Society come out. Santana and Ortiz are there. There's just all-out brawl going on. And then you suddenly realise that Moxie and Tanahashi are just staring lovingly into each other's eyes in the ring, staring each other down. They don't care about what else is going on. It's those two against each other for the interim AEW Championship on Sunday. Sidge, your thoughts on this main event?
Picture one of the shots where it's like, quite a wide shot. You can see Tanahashi and Moxley in the ring. You can see all the ridiculous contrived chaos where, again, it never feels like anyone's getting beaten up. Never feels like anyone's in danger. Never feels like it's any hatred. It just feels to me at this point like a blur. I've seen so much of it.
The antithesis of like anarchy in the arena, basically. Exactly. Where you look and suddenly someone will be busted open.
It's just totally redundant. Totally redundant, facilitating things that are going to happen in the coming weeks. Think of that picture, right? Text. Me trying to watch Dynamite in front of Mox and Tanahashi, and then Dynamite. Just at this schmoz. I thought the match was a bit weird. Like, from the get-go, I've seen loads of praise for it. I'm thinking, really? So you have Mox and Tanner do this cool thing where it's like, right, okay, we're going to beat each other up on Sunday, but for now, let's just take care of these. Then they do the cool United spot where they're running, and then Archer just immediately takes control of Tanahashi.
Yeah, I thought that was strange. I'll give you that.
A little bit of, like, shine. It's rare. I shouldn't be telling... Tanahashi, how would do this, for God's sake? Should I? I don't think I should be telling Tanahashi how to structure a goddamn match, for Christ's sake. He's the best in the freaking world at actually structuring a match and executing the basic principles of a wrestling match.
Without a dragon screw, Tanner. Keep that one. That's from me, Michael Sidgwick.
There you go.
This week's 5-star review is brought to you by Mr. H. Tanahashi. Thanks for your review.
Another thing that's weird in terms of this match, right, is that now, like, at the best of times, like the 2012 to 2017 Tanahashi peak. And he was like, and he was incredible for another 2 years afterwards because he was a bit broken. But he was like, I'm not broken. I'm still goddamn ace.
Look at my body.
Look at my body. I'm a bit broken, but I'm better for being broken because it means I can sell more. And then after 2019 into the pandemic era, it's a very different Tanahashi. And it's not quite the same, but there's so much goodwill extended towards him. And he still turn it on at the right moments. Doing Tanahashi and kind of a spotlighting what he can do in a tag match that's TV paced, I don't think flattered him at all. He has to really warm up to deliver the full Tanahashi performance. He has to be in that ring for 10, 15 minutes at a time, and he's all limber and he's all full of adrenaline, and then he turns it on. He has to warm up these days. He has to warm up, and I couldn't do that. Like, he didn't look like, if you'd never seen him before, and there are people who haven't. You didn't look like the great main event legend Tanahashi, because it's not the right platform for what you can do at this advanced stage of his career. Honestly, my favorite bits of this match were involving John Moxley, like effing and jeffing down the lens. And there's an awesome bit where him and Archer find themselves in each other's past. It's like, fuck, I hate you. I remember how much I hate you. And it's like, yeah, I hate you too. Let's fucking go. And they had this wonderful little sequence. They've overcomplicated it, as AEW so often does. I'm depressed that I keep saying this.
I also thought very little of the match. It really didn't flatter anybody. and Moxley sort of got away with it by just force of will more than anything else. It certainly didn't flatter Chris Jericho, and Archer was there, as we all knew he was there, to be a fall guy, which is, even when that's another thing as well, even when AEW are trying to, even when Tony Khan is trying to pretend he's booking stars versus stars, he's throwing in somebody that can get pinned. It's happening with Aussie Open and Ospreay, it's happening with Archer and Jericho, you know, like, if Sammy was in there, there might have been a bit more predictable, because he's just turned, and it's like, well, do you want to pin him against it? Do you want to commit to anything ever now? And he doesn't. He puts Archer in instead. I'd have been much kinder to the post-match chaos. It didn't feel like organic violence. I said this at the time, like, it's really hard to make Anarchy in the Arena. That's like such an achievement, to make it feel like a real fight. And it didn't feel like a real fight, and it didn't feel like anybody was really getting hurt. So everybody windmilling each other. But I did have a lot more time for it because of the involvement of Minoru Suzuki, as if from nowhere, and Shooter unannounced. And there's been a distinct lack of danger, of threat, of anything really to do with it. It's neither one thing or the other. It's not an invasion, because half of them are like the mates. You know, you've got the Sting's dudes with attitudes. Friend New Japan aren't this invading company, but like, it did start with a handshake. So there's a working relationship. It's not really clear what Forbidden Door is or why it's happening or anything. And then just for a split second, it was like, these are people that are not here all the time and they're here to fight. And I got something out of that. You know, I just felt a little bit of something for just all the action taking place at the same time. It didn't matter that they were trying to build blood and guts and trying to build a pay-per-view. And then they got the timing wrong. And like, Tanahashi and Moxley are staring at each other for absolutely ages. And it just gets a little bit awkward. And it's like, oh, you've gone early here, haven't you? And then it feels fake. It feels really fake, because they're just still staring at each other. And it's like, please be out of time. Please be out of time. Please be out of time. Still staring. Like, we're recording this at midday UK time, and I haven't checked Twitter to see if they've stopped staring at each other yet. It was too awkward to work in that way, when, as nice and cathartic as it was to just see John Moxley celebrating in the ring on that episode of Dynamite that time when they got the timing wrong, then it was like Suzuki that cut Kazunina Ray. And then they had all this time left at the end of the show because they got the timing wrong. This is what happens when wrestling gets a time. It's kind of a disaster. You know, the veil's lifted, and it's a bit like, it breaks suspension disbelief. And it was a shame, because I didn't really mind the brawl. I think the idea of them two no-selling the brawl to stare at one another for the interim belt, I think that would have been as epic feeling as it would if it was just Tony Schiavone screaming that they're out of time and you get one quick glimpse of it. I think that would have worked.
There's like 4 minutes left.
There's ages left. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like the thing, remember last week where it was like, it finished, and then if you went some places you could watch the bit with him telling Jungle Boy's mum that she'd raised a piece of shit, basically.
Very much the red.
And I was looking at the timer when it 1, 2, 3 happened, and I was like, oh, okay. And then the brawl broke out, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, so what's going to happen is they're going to stare at each other, and they go, okay, that's for Sunday. Anyway, let's deal with what's going on the outside. And maybe they're going to clear everyone out of there. And then, like you said, they just stood there, and I was like, guys, what's happening, guys? Guys. Like, it was such a surreal ending to the show that could have been, perfect.
Yeah, before we finish up, I just want to say one more thing. Sorry, I know we've gone long. This is in no way an endorsement of WWE's horrifically overproduced and, you know, timed out formulaic bollocks. But after 3 years, there are still so many examples of AEW being absolute amateur hour when it comes to TV production and pacing the shows.
Cutting to fans on phones. It's happening all the time at the moment. Cutting to fans on phones. This needs to stop.
One more thing, actually. That, while you're correct in that regard, did you notice when Christian Cage is cutting that promo and the entire crowd was going, shut the fuck up. Cut to like an 11-year-old kid for like a split second going, shut the fuck up. It's great.
Give me a weekend show so I can get my kids into AEW, because I can't watch Dynamite and Rampage.
Well, let us know your thoughts on AEW Dynamite on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
I want to relive the glory days of AEW. My Sidge's brilliant book, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, on Amazon right now. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, as I said. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Tomorrow, we're going to be previewing Rampage and talking about the potential replacements for Bryan Danielson at Forbidden Door. And later on today, we're going to be doing a full Forbidden Door preview for you. And if you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, that'll drop in your feed as soon as it is released. But for now, this has been the Dynamite Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.